Can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
CNBC's Big January continues with the JPM Healthcare Conference, the Amex Golf Tournament, Inauguration Day, and the World Economic Forum in Davos. Get ahead of the game. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
TJ Edwards.
We were serious about the Bears growing up. Like, my dad, my mom, every Sunday. I don't know how many times I've had to listen to actually this show in the car.
Linebacker for your Chicago Bears.
Edwards fills the gap. That is the 14th tackle today.
Yeah, I had the Hester jersey. I got a picture somewhere with Urlacher. His rookie year, he had like a meet and greet or whatever, so I got to meet him. I was a big Briggs fan, you know, Mike Brown, like all those dudes. Me and my buddies would just kind of emulate them growing up in the backyard, messing around. So it's surreal that it's all kind of come full circle like this, for sure.
Former Lakes Community High School quarterback.
Edwards back to pass. Down the middle, he's got Spencer, and he makes the catch at the 40.
TJ Edwards with Bernstein and Harris on the Score.
What a time to talk to TJ Edwards, who joins us on the Circa Sports Illinois Hotline. Download the Circa Sports app today. The Bears linebacker is on Twitter at TJ Edwards 8, the numeral. And he's on Twitch TV, twitch.tv/Chicago670 The Score. Anthony Heron in for Marshall Harris here on Bernstein and Harris. TJ, how are you?
I'm good, man. How are you guys doing?
Good. Did you have a lovely Christmas with your family?
Yeah, really, really didn't do much. My parents are in Florida, so we had a little FaceTime and stuff like that. And then kind of just hung out, man. Took the dog for a walk, and that was about it.
That's actually I must admit a little bit surprising, even with the folks being down in Florida. You're able to just lay low on Christmas.
Yeah.
I guess you had some activities coming up the following day where you're probably trying to rest up a little bit. But I would imagine there's some expectations between the holiday and playing in your hometown and everything else. Folks just left you alone, huh?
You know, it's one of those where I wasn't too upset about it. Obviously, with the game being the next day, it's a little different scenario. You know, we had to go down to the hotel that night and everything like that. But it's a blessing, man. Got to see them, you know, via phone and all that. And hope you guys had a good Christmas as well.
It'll never be as sad as a Christmas my rookie year. I was in Detroit. And we didn't play on Christmas, but it was one of those where we had a game.
Yep.
Christmas adjacent. I went to the Greektown Casino and was just hanging out on Christmas Day by myself in the Greektown Casino in Detroit. Just, I couldn't think of anything else better to do my rookie year. So my Christmas was a lot more sad than yours sounds.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'll take the dog over that, I think, but it's all good.
I stayed in the Detroit Greektown Casino. I actually had a lovely time there. So
yeah, it's not bad. I planned to be on Christmas.
You could certainly do worse. The Bears' performance on Thursday night was, to be kind, lackluster. And you all heard it. You all heard, TJ, how dissatisfied the fans were. And I'm sure you were dissatisfied, too. It's just the latest necessitation of your ability to compartmentalize, I guess. And you've been remarkable at it all year, sort of understanding how the fans feel, while also knowing you got to keep going out there and doing your job.
Yeah. I mean, it's... You know, you feel, obviously we feel the same, right? We feel the same kind of frustrations and disappointment. And obviously Chicago is a very passionate place, right? It's a team that, it's a city that cares about its teams a lot, especially football. And they want to see good things happening. And, you know, of late, you know, the last stretch of years, it hasn't. So when you get a passionate city like that and you know, they're expecting good things, they're not happening, you're gonna hear it. That's kind of how it goes. But you know, I think that's a part of me, right? I want to be here for when that ship turns, right? When we can do those things to flip the script, because really, when you know, when you're winning, there's really no better place to win than here, for sure.
What was better about the brand of defense that, that you guys played. Seattle went into that game. Yeah, it's a short week for everybody, but all that talent they have on offense, quarterback who've been putting up millions of yards, it felt like, and a game they needed to stay alive in the playoff picture. You held them to 6 points. What was better about the execution in that game than it had been in recent weeks?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think we got off to a great start. I think with that first drive, they were able to kind of do some things, some unscouted looks, and, you know, kind of that first 15, right, that you see every week. So you kind of have to be prepared to kind of just play rules at that point. But I felt like from there we got settled. We were able to, I don't know, kind of just lock into what we were doing, right? They were giving us certain things. We made really good adjustments on the sidelines and at halftime, and we were able to kind of correct the things that we were doing. And I just thought guys were making plays. I think Kyler's fumble was huge. I think the D-line, their pressure on the quarterback was big all night. You know, DT with a sack there too, and getting the ball out. Just anytime you can kind of make plays in those type of games where you need momentum, that's all you can do. You know, is try to give the other team, try to give our offense, you know, extra possessions and things like that. And you know, unfortunately, it didn't work out that way. But I was part of the battle, man. You know, obviously it was a tough environment where, you know, as expected, where things aren't going well. And we just kept battling till the very end.
When you say unscouted looks, how common is that? How often do you guys have to sort of look at each other like, ooh, boy, this wasn't on one of the cards during scout team. We have to figure this out. Is that common in the NFL? And going back to your experience with Philadelphia, is that how you guys consider how well you're being prepared?
Yeah, I mean, I think, right, there's only a certain amount of things that you can see from your coaches during the week, right? You're never going to be able to see everything that's going to happen. You're never going to be able to, you know, rep every play that you're going to see. It's just, it's impossible. It's not how it works. And I feel like, you know, with our calls, it comes down to us understanding our rules so well that if we get a play that maybe we haven't seen, you know, we're able to still, you know, run that play correctly, you know, based on our rules. And they're running just a little type gap scheme that was a little different for us, and we were able to you know, we saw it once, and then after that we did well with it, but it gave us some issues to start. But I think it's a common thing. You know, every offensive coordinator is going to go in with their, you know, favorite plays of, you know, versus what they think we're going to play, and, you know, from there they kind of get into what's worked and what hasn't, and then they kind of just, you know, repeat those plays. So it's a little bit of a chess game, I think, to start. But, you know, once you kind of get rolling and in the rhythm of the game, it's just football.
I'm happy to get an opportunity to talk to you, because there's a, I guess, a supposition that I've been kind of posing on the station here in recent weeks, where, you know, the best defenses that I was ever a part of, great defenses throughout the sport, tend to have a couple of jerks on them, you know, like guys who play with just a certain temperament that's going to get under the opponent's skin, maybe even get under their own teammate's skin, but kind of walk that line of, is it in the rules? Is it out of bounds? That sort of thing. I don't know if you want 11 of them on the field, but there can be quality defense that benefits from having a couple of them. You're obviously a very physical player, and you play with your hair on fire week in and week out, and it's why you've been so productive. Do you feel like that particular temperament, kind of the appropriate level of disdain for the opponent, is that something that can enhance the way that a defense performs?
I mean, absolutely. I think, I mean, like you said, right, I don't know if you want 11 dudes who are just, you know, but like you said, it's good to have a couple. And I think we do have guys who kind of just love to compete, right? Honestly, I think Jalen Johnson is like that. I think he's the guy who, no matter what, he just wants to beat the dude in front of him. No matter what it looks like, he wants to, you know, embarrass him, because honestly, Jalen's that good. Right, where he can do those things. And but I think as a defense, we have kind of that chippiness, you know what I'm saying, and where we're frustrated, we're not going to go out there and just, you know, lay down and let the other team, you know, do whatever they want. I think it comes down to, and to me, I guess, you know, that's football for me, right? I believe that it's imposing your will on another human being, and being able to beat them snap after snap. And you know, obviously that's not how that goes in the NFL, because everyone's good. But I think having kind of that mindset of, you're not going to be able to, you know, take what's mine. I think that's big time in this league. And I think that's why guys stick around and, understand that every week you're going to be tested on that. So, I think we have that type defense. I think, You know, again, it'll be a great test for us this week too, going into Lambeau and everything like that against a team that's beaten us a consecutive amount of times now, and you know, something to prove for sure.
I remember covering some teams. It was back when, you know, we'd be allowed on the field at the end of games and stuff, and you know, just being around some Bears teams where every once in a while there would be a player who was legitimately scary, like an actual scary guy. And
yeah,
you know, when you talk to Anthony's point about sometimes you're like, dude, like this dude's like legit crazy, you know, and sometimes it's your teammate and sometimes not. And sometimes you're the guys who have to get kicked out of a practice every once in a while. And it doesn't mean they're like that off the field. It just means when they get to that certain arousal level, you're like, holy crap, he's in a place. Have you ever had a teammate like that at any level where you just were kind of like, oh, OK, this guy's different?
I mean, I know exactly what you're talking about. And I think one, honestly, for a football team, that's healthy to have someone like that, to have someone kind of spark, you know, maybe it's a lull in camp or whatever. And you know that guy's going to kind of just either spark some competition, maybe a fight, but just to get things going. I'm trying to think. I mean, I feel like there's a number of guys who can get to that level, you know what I'm saying? Who, if pushed in a certain way, can definitely get to that level.
I mean, people used to say it about John Randall, who was like a, you know, Hall of Fame level Pro Bowl player, but would get into such a frenzy and such a lather, and would go through the media guides and the bios and learn the names of his opponents, kids and pets and wives, and talk about who he was going to kill and dismember. And I'm like, my God, man.
Yeah, no, I don't know if I've ever been around anyone like that before, or had that on my team, you know, because, yeah, no, I haven't seen anything to that extent, but I definitely know there's some, you know, to play this game, you kind of got to be wired differently anyway. To be able to go, you know, try to run through somebody every single play is a different mentality, but I've never... you know, to that extent, I've never, you know, you hear the stories of, you know, when I was in Philly, like Brian Dawkins and all that, and I've never got to see that personally, but I definitely know that it's out there for sure.
What were the stories? What was the best story?
I mean, I think, honestly, you just kind of, when I was in Philly, you kind of heard the legacy, right? And just, then you see the clips of kind of just the person that he turned into. You know what I'm saying? When he was about to run on the field and like kind of turn into Weapon X and all that. And like, I guess I didn't know, I knew of him and all that, but until I got there, I didn't know like Weapon X had like his own locker, like in the locker room and all that. Like, I didn't know it was that serious. But it was what makes those guys so great, to be honest with you.
When you're reading the run game for an opponent, and it strikes me that one of the things that's made you so exceptionally productive is the way you can anticipate certain moments in the game, and it almost feels intuitive, even though there's obviously a lot of homework you're doing during the week to prepare for certain moments. But if you can, talk us through those times when you're going to do a run through, you know, when you feel like you've diagnosed a run, the back has declared, because especially with a lot of these zone schemes that teams will use, it isn't always defined where that back is going to declare. When you guess, you got to guess right when you're going to go get it. So what's that like for you, and what's the process that you're going through both mentally and physically to go make a play on the other side of the line of scrimmage?
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of it is, you know, film study in that sense, in terms of just understanding teams' kind of favorite runs, and especially runs that they like against certain fronts. And, you know, and I think it's also understanding how the guys in front of me play, right? I know if we get a, you know, a outside zone type run to the three tech side, I know that there's going to be some type of wash to where I can kind of fold in and kind of replace that gap a little quicker than I would on a, you know, on a, just an inside zone play. And a lot of it is also just kind of getting a feel for the game as it's going. I mean, Seattle was hitting us with a certain play where they're running type of bubble, and then with a little kind of either gap scheme away from it or something like that throughout the game. They hit us three or four times with it, and then that was that third and four that I kind of heard something similar that I heard on a check, you know, throughout the game, and was able to kind of just anticipate. And as soon as I saw the back kind of go flat, I knew what play it was, and I was able to just kind of shoot the gap and go make a play. But I think a lot of those things come with, you know, now that I have played a good amount of ball, I kind of understand how things fit, but also understanding kind of how the opponent's trying to attack you too.
All right, let's talk about this upcoming game. And you have spoken at length about your unique perspective, considering your time in Madison and marrying into a Packer family. So what does this week mean as a Chicago Bear, especially it being the last game of the season, perhaps the last chance for you guys to go out feeling good about yourselves with a win?
Yeah, I think that's all that's on our mind is we just, you know, I feel like there's been so much that we've gone through this year. But to go out here and go put a complete game together, go put a great performance together in front of a hostile environment, you know, and again, a team that's beaten us consecutive amount of times, that you know, that hurts, man. And, you know, me being from here, that nothing pisses me off more. And so kind of just understanding that, too. And, you know, best believe the family group chat has been rolling a little bit this week, too. So it's been all good. But we're definitely excited just to, again, one last performance with this team, understanding kind of perspective wise, too, that it's the NFL. Right. And things change so quickly. So understanding that this group won't look the same next year. So going out there, you know, to Lambeau, noon, going to be cold, go out there and put a complete game together, right, for the last time this year, I think is nothing better than kind of, you know, where we're at in the season, too.
Helmet communication gets discussed largely just through the quarterback position with the offensive play caller. So once Matt Eberflutes gets fired, you've got a different voice in your ear on defense. And now it's been several weeks of Eric Washington as that defensive signal caller for you guys. Is there a rhythm for defensive players, for green dot guys on defense with a different voice, a different signal caller in your ear that you feel like maybe you guys are starting to find something?
So I've had this in the past, on my past team where, you know, you change in signal callers and I think it takes a little bit. But I also think that, you know, the defense is the defense, right? So being able to kind of anticipate how things are being called, I think is huge. And I think Tremaine has done such a good job with that these past 2 years that I've been with him. And I know that, you know, me, him, and Coach Washington have a good understanding and kind of, you know, even after every series, we're coming off the field and we're talking about what could possibly be up next and kind of what Coach Washington's thinking, what we're seeing on the field in terms of how they're attacking us and how we can maybe switch up things to kind of get different looks. But I feel like Tremaine has done such a good job of kind of commanding that in a sense of whether we're getting the call earlier, you know, whether we need to maybe talk about our, you know, situation that's coming that we're, you know, going into on the field. And I feel like we've all been on the same page, which is that gives you the best shot, right? I think that's one of the easiest ways to lose is to beat yourself. And that's not being ready. That's not understanding what you're doing. And, you know, I don't think we've had that. It's just kind of we got to go out there and execute a little bit better at times. But I think the communication's been really good.
Bears fans always like it when they feel that the Bears actually understand and embody the local rivalry. And in the past, not every year, but in the past, I know sometimes whether it's ownership or some level of the Bears management has brought in some old timer, some to say, hey, this is still meaningful, this means something. Do they do that? Is it still reinforced or are we just so far past that now?
I know what you're saying. I don't know if there's any, you know, not that since I've been here, been guys like come in and talk about the rivalry and things like that, but I feel like we understand it here. You know, I think I remember the beginning of the year, the first time we played the Packers, we kind of had a little defensive film, just like watching some of the highlights of the game to kind of get people to understand, you know, what this means. And, you know, and again, I think my mindset's a little different too, just because I've lived it, I've been through it, you know, I've seen it firsthand, and understand how important this game is. And I think it's just a pride thing too, right? Like it's a division rival, it's a team that has beaten you again for a while now, and it's kind of just understanding that, you know, there's people that aren't expecting a lot from us, and what are you going to do about it? I think that's what's exciting to me is, you know, being counted out and being able to go out there on their home field and go out there, compete to get a win.
And Matt LaFleur is hailed as one of the best play callers in the sport. Certainly got quality personnel over there. From a defensive perspective, what are going to be a couple of the keys to you guys going out and performing well at Lambeau?
Yeah, I mean, I think They're very explosive offense, and I think they do such a good job of their play action game, their screen game, you know, kind of getting guys out in space, just to kind of isolate matchups and things like that. But no, it's with a great run game now too. I think Josh Jacobs has done really good things for them. He's quick, powerful, with an O-line who's played together with some time now. It's a really good offense, man, and they understand kind of where they're at on the field, how to attack certain defenses. So you can tell that they're operationally very sound. It's going to come down to who makes more plays. That's plain and simple. There's going to be one-on-ones that guys have to win. There's going to be pass rush that guys have to win to kind of make Jordan Love as uncomfortable as he can, because I feel like when he's poised back there and able to see everything, they're hard to beat. So we got to try to speed him up a little bit and kind of hurry that count up just so that we can kind of react and go anticipate and go make plays, man. And at the end of the day, bring our own juice. I think, especially going into this stadium, I think getting momentum early will be big time for us.
Do you guys get to sleep in tomorrow, or is it business as usual?
Business as usual, man. That's how it goes. I was just talking about that with a couple of guys. It's like, New Year's and all that, but I mean, it's also a Tuesday. That's what's tough. It's just a tough day, to be honest with you.
Hey, if we're being honest, though, if we're being honest, seriously, so we're having people over, which means I have to stay up until midnight just because we're hosting people. And I'm just like, oh, my God, how am I going to do this? It just seems so, for old, we olds, I'd like to be in bed by 10. And now I can't. So I'm actually envious of you.
Get your afternoon coffee going, man. You'll be all right.
Yeah, I guess, whatever. All right, TJ, thanks as always. Happy, healthy new year. And here's to closing out the season on a positive note.
Absolutely. Happy new year to you guys, man. Talk to you guys next week.
Thanks, TJ.
That's TJ Edwards, who has been a delight all year.
Did you just call TJ Edwards old?
No, I said we olds, as in people my age.
Okay, not the collective we.
And my fellow olds.
Your fellow olds. Gotcha.
Yes, right. But I'm not allowed to be tonight. I got to pretend to be a young tonight. So that means either coffee or nap. But you know what's going to happen? Have you seen the movie Slapshot?
Oh, yeah.
You know when he tries to nap?
No.
Remember when Reg Dunlop, it's the big game. It's the day of the big game. Okay. And he's in his Spartan little apartment, and he's lying down, and he's in his boxers and his T-shirt, and he puts his the sock over his eyes. And every time he's about to fall asleep, another issue comes up or another something happens, and the dog comes over or the phone rings, and somebody's got to. So all he wants to do in the world is just nap.
I'm just a bad napper in
general. I'm terrible at it.
I'm awful at naps.
I'm the worst.
Oh, man.
Some people are so good at it.
I'm so envious. If sleeping on airplanes, like moving vehicles, I can fall asleep in a moving vehicle no matter how tight and cramped and uncomfortable I am. If it's an airplane or a bus, you name it, I can fall asleep.
I can't.
But when it's just nap time, if I'm motionless and you just tell me to lay down and nap, cannot do it.
Well, some guys, Drew McGarry always brags about his napping ability, the writer. He says that the key is having a hoodie that you can just kind of pull down over your eyes. And I can occasionally do it like a golf nap on a slow, like a non-football weekend where you just hear like the ASMR of the gnat sound of the golf and kind of drift off.
I feel like Lawrence talks about quality naps. Am I remembering that correctly?
He's good at it, though. Yeah, I think he's actually good at it. I've always struggled, and then I get in my head, I'm supposed to be napping, but I'm still up. I should be asleep by
asleep
now. Now I only
Close
have
your eyes.
Now I only
Shut
have an hour.
Tighter.
Right. Now I only have an hour and 20 minutes left to nap. Damn it. Right. Now I only have 68 minutes left to nap. Well, now screw it. I'll go work out instead.
Who wants to nap for 53 minutes? Just get up and do something.
There's no point.
Go live your life.
God. Now I'm all screwed. So now I know I definitely can't. I guess I will have to do the coffee. Whatever. It shouldn't be this difficult, should it?
Have your wife put you in a sleeper hole.
She'd love to. when we return, the Cubs' pursuit of star Japanese pitcher Roki Sasaki is very interesting, as is, I think, a minor trade that they made that I think might matter. So I want to touch on a little baseball when we come back on The Score.